When this is over, let's get back into enjoying life again.
Welcome to the Juggling the Chaos of Recovery podcast, where we focus on health, wellness, and overcoming all types of addictions. You're in the right place if you're a mom, dad, friend, sibling, or caregiver who has a loved one who is or was struggling with an eating disorder or any other kind of addiction. In a time when everything seems heavy, I'm here to bring you a real yet lighthearted take on what the heck we are all supposed to do with our lives while we care for our loved ones who are struggling. One thing holds true throughout it all. You can't juggle the chaos without smiling, at least a little bit. All right, welcome to another episode of the Juggling the Chaos of Recovery podcast. I'm your host, Moira Gorski, and thrilled to be here again with you and that you are here again with me. I am bringing you another interview today, one of my favorite days where I can introduce you to people that I've met along the way in my journey. And Jill, who's joining us today, I think the way that I met Jill was through some support groups in the area. Mm-hmm. And she, when she lived in Illinois, you were running some support groups, and I was reaching out to you to learn about those for my daughter, for myself, and learn more about those. So we've stayed in touch, and again, I continue to learn from you for different resources. I've been able to reach out to Jill, and the reason why she's such a resource is because she's recovered from her own substance abuse in 1984, from codependency in 1992. She recovered from her own eating disorder in 2015. You know, despite her family origin traumas, she intentionally lives a life of serving others and helping them seek meaning and healing in their own lives. Jill raised her son alone as a single, right, non-married mom for 17 years, and she met her wonderful husband, Larry, in 1992, has been married to him since May of 2000. Jill is super, very resilient and has an extremely big heart to help others, and she just really has had that tenacity herself to heal herself and really never give up, and then she really exudes that to others that she works with to help. So thank you, Jill Reynolds, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you and you coming to share, because as I continue to learn, I believe that as we share our stories, then we can help others with their journey. So why don't you start out by telling us your kind of your story. You've had some dependencies and addictions and disorders in the past, and tell us, why don't you share with me and our listeners your story?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm Jill Reynolds, and I currently live in Branson, Missouri. I'm from the Chicagoland area, and just really an overview of my story, because it's really big, is I grew up in a very, very dysfunctional family with a lot of abuse, a lot of emotional abuse, some physical and some sexual abuse. Probably my issues began mostly with feeling like I was never wanted. My storyline was always my mom saying, "I wish you were never born. There's nothing good about you. No one would ever want to be with you." So that story stayed with me throughout my life. And my mom was married three times. My dad and her divorced when I was around six. My eating disorder started right before they divorced, Maura. I remember sitting at the kitchen table eating, and I would constantly say, "My tummy hurts, my tummy hurts." And I was very, very small-framed little girl. And of course, my dad's from German descent. My mom's Greek, Irish, and the typical 1950s, clean up your plate. And so even though I said my tummy hurt, they kept telling me to eat. And so at 5 years old, I started taking my food and chewing it and spitting it into a napkin and throwing it away. And I never thrived because I really was malnourished and did not know until I was in my 50s that I had genetic celiac disease, which is why my tummy always hurt. And so I was eating all kinds of pasta and bread and cereals, and just the gluten was killing me. I remember being a little girl and walking on the sidewalk and being blown off of the curb. And my grandpa said that the wind was going to blow me away. And I remember always being afraid that my frame was so little I was going to blow away in the wind. My parents divorced. And then my mom remarried twice from that, both really insane men. One was a bisexual, bigamist, alcoholic who was sexually abusive to my brother and almost killed my mom, believe it or not. And then my next stepfather was passive aggressive, alcoholic. And he would touch me and grab me and sexually abuse me. So there was a lot of so much confusion around my identity. I got date raped at 14. And when I got date raped at 14, I remember walking home crying and never telling anyone and then starting to take amphetamines so that I wouldn't eat because I did not want my body to develop. And so I wanted to stay as small as I could. And so I think my body image issues began right after the date rape. At 18, the minute I turned 18, I left home to get away from the insanity as quickly as I could. Mm-hmm. I actually got hired, believe it or not, to be a Playboy bunny in Chicago and turned down the job when they told me I had to wear stiletto heels, fake nails, and fake eyelashes because I just was not yet ready to be that feminine. It was okay to put on the bunny outfit, but to wear makeup and all the other stuff, I was like, I can't do this. So I turned down the job, but my roommate, Kathy, was a bunny. So we had carte blanche to Hugh Hefner's mansion, where then we started partying with all the rock and roll stars of the 70s, getting backstage. And then I ended up actually hitchhiking in the 70s and ended up first in Arizona, then Portland and San Diego. When I got to San Diego, I ended up getting into the music industry. I was a promotion assistant at a radio station and my roommate emceed all the concerts. So we were backstage at all the concerts. I taught Tai Chi to Stevie Nicks backstage. It was just a lot of fun and lots of partying, but lots and lots and lots of cocaine and lots of sex and lots of drugs. And I ended up then actually acting out my sexual abuse. I acted it out by actually becoming a dancer because I felt like I had power over men by dancing. The place I worked, they couldn't touch us, but I could get on stage and dance, and it gave me that power. Again, I've learned all this after I did lots of therapy. Around 1980, my drug addiction and alcoholism had gotten so severe that I started to have blackouts. I couldn't remember where I was going. I was down to a very, very, very small size. I lived for probably about 5 years just on one bowl of cereal a day. Don't know how I'm here to talk about it, but my anorexia got crazy. And then I had a spiritual awakening. I just, you know, somehow or another, from my childhood, my dad had raised us Catholic and had taken us to church our whole life. And then I had a spiritual awakening at about 28 and moved back to Chicago and started going to church. But ended up one day getting pregnant without, you know, expecting. I just, you know, ended up having one night of relapse, doing drugs, getting high with a guy I didn't know, getting pregnant. Was going to have an abortion, but in the 11th hour changed my mind and decided to have the baby. And I parented my son. And when he was around 2 years old, I started having quite a bit of anger coming out. And one day I spanked him really hard and all of a sudden just lights went off and said, what am I? And now am I going to be an abusive mom? And at that moment I realized I better get help. And then I started to go first to Adult Children of Alcoholics meetings. And then I decided to go to AA meetings and work recovery. And at that point I'd been, you know, getting off of drugs and alcohol, but I was a dry drunk. Mm-hmm. And so all of my pent up emotions had been, you know, really stuffed down and started to work the program. Around 1992, my sister's husband died of alcoholism and I found him dead on the floor. And I ended up taking her in and realizing how codependent I was. And in the 90s, they used to have treatment centers for codependency. So I actually got to go to treatment for a whole month and work through my codependent issues, because I was always the chief caretaker of my mom and my sister and everyone around me. So when I got home from treatment, I started some Codependents Anonymous meetings at my church and did guest speak. I did it was a guest speaker on a panel. And the first week after I guest spoke, Maura, we had 100 people come to the first CODA meeting. And so for about 10 years, I sponsored over 50 women in recovery and really was doing phenomenal. And then within a few years of going to starting the meeting, within a year or so, I met my husband and started dating. Well, all of my intimacy issues had come back. Dating is really scary when you haven't dated in a long time. So I started dating, and as I started to date, my eating disorder started to come back again. And I forgot to mention, when I got pregnant with my son is when my eating disorder kicked back in again with binge eating. I had switched from anorexia. And for my first time in my entire life, when I got pregnant, I discovered sugar for the first time and started to binge on sugar. So I went from a very small size to quite large size. And then again, when I got clean and sober, and then I met my husband and I started having intimacy issues and not knowing what to do, I started getting back into the binge eating. We continued to date for 7 years, believe it or not, and then got married. And things started to get pretty well. My career, which kind of goes into my story, my career after leaving San Diego, I ended up working in radio for about a year, selling radio advertising. And then I ended up selling air freight and truck freight for 15 years and technology for 15 years. And then I'm married to my husband and things are going around pretty well. Well, around 2005, my mother came to visit us. She was living in Vegas and stayed at her house. And I saw that she had a big mass on her throat. Anyway, turned out, long and short, that the doctors said she should move back from Vegas to Chicago because they thought she had cancer. So I brought in my abusive mom back into my home for 2 years. And she ended up having peritoneal cancer and stayed living with us. And even though I was, again, lovingly caring for her and had done my 12 steps and forgave her and did, you know, my amends and I did everything the program talks about, living with her just really triggered all of my binge eating. So within 2 months of her passing, I checked myself in for the first time to a treatment center in California for eating disorders and really got well, and my life started to get more manageable again and healed. And then in around 2011, I ended up just literally hating selling technology. So I went back to school and got certified as a meeting and event specialist and got hired with a management company selling hotel accommodations at Holiday Inn Expresses in Deerfield, Illinois, and Arlington Heights. And I had several of them jobs because my job was to turn the property around. So while working in the hospitality industry, one day I went to O'Hare Airport to pick up my sister and pulled up curbside, and it was a rainy September night. And as I pulled curbside, she couldn't get her suitcase into my car by herself. So I got out of my vehicle and leaned inside to pull the suitcase in my backseat. And as I was leaning over, the lady driving in traffic next to curb smashed into my open car door. And my body flew to the left. And needless to say, I needed two new knees and a new hip. And my back got damaged. And the trauma from that escalated with infections in my body and hospitalizations. And the pain was so bad, and I didn't want to medicate on drugs, so I started binging again. And the binging got out of control to the point that I needed to go back into treatment. I went to Rosewood Ranch in Arizona for 2 months. And while at Rosewood, 2 days before I discharged, I got home, and that's when they realized my hip had collapsed. So then, as soon as I got out of treatment, I went right back into surgery. And after I healed from that, the trauma escalated again, So I went to Castlewood in St. Louis for 3 months for my eating disorder to work on the PTSD and the body image issues, and then came back home and really started to do well. I really felt like I'm balanced now. Things are going really well. I could not, for the life of me, handle the job because even though things were going well, the pain in my body was always a 10. And again, I didn't want to medicate on food and I didn't medicate on drugs. So I ended up going on disability. And when I went on disability, I was so bored at home. I was, you know, I'm only 66. So this happened in my late 50s, early 60s. And I didn't know what to do. So I asked one of my therapists at Castlewood if she would be willing to do some intensive retreats with me for healing. And she's a drama therapist. So she decided to do them with me. And starting in 2016, that's what her and I have done. And I've been really on a journey of now giving back to others and helping others. And while I was healing in Chicago, there were no eating disorders groups at all in Chicago. So I started an Eating Disorders Anonymous meeting at St. Alexius in Hoffman Estates and sponsored quite a few people in healing. And I continue to make myself available. Even though I moved from Branson, they have not taken me off of that list at St. Alexius, even though I've told them to take me off. So I'll still get calls about the meeting, and instead of just being mean and telling people, no, the meeting doesn't exist, I'll sit on the phone with them and help them and direct them to sources so that they can get direction where to go. So I'm kind of like that crisis hotline now when people mm-hmm. want to know, where do I go for treatment?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I've always found with you is whenever I've reached out, be it on the phone or on a message, you're always there to offer suggestions. And I mean, what a story that is. I've heard parts of it. I haven't heard all of it. And what really stuck out to me is that we can't fix what we cannot face, you know? And everybody has a story. You had a tremendous story. You could probably just continue to feel like, woe is me. Look at everything that happened. And just feel like you wanted to stay in that victim mode. But instead, what you have done over the years, and you've never given up, as I mentioned in the beginning, you have that tenacity. You've never given up on yourself and finding a way to, again, deal with what's gone on with you in the past and be able to heal through that. And now, again, to see the passion that you have for helping other people, you know, and you're in a time, an age where many would retire. But you seem to be just getting started. and so again, good for you. And again, great for those that you are helping and will continue to help.
Right before I came on with you, I was doing a call with a girl that I'm doing a retreat with at a horse ranch in Montana. And she's coaching me right now. And she's still, what do you really feel your vision is for right now? And with the coronavirus happening, what keeps coming up for me more than ever right now is I just feel like we're in such a world with the social distancing of so much pain, of disconnection and loneliness. So what I want to start doing actually, and be great if your listeners wanted to join me, is this week I want to launch a new Facebook group on connection, dream, and getaway and getaways. And I really want to just like build a community of like-minded people who feel like I do. I mean, I'm sitting in Branson and it's just me and my husband and the whole city's shut down. There's nothing I can do here except do Facebook stuff and computer. And I just really want to start connecting people because I think we're so lonely right now. Mm-hmm. And through that, I just have this vision right now of by connecting with others in the group, I really want to try to build affinity so that we can travel together and do like really like-minded stuff of wellness and healing in cool places, like go to Aruba together or go to Puerto Vallarta, or if we're not safe in the, you know, feeling like we want to leave the country, then let's go to this ranch in Montana together. But the big thing is I want to be together, mm-hmm. because you know as well as I know, Maura, in recovery, what HALT means. It means H means when you're hungry, stop and eat. A means when you're angry, process your anger. L means when you're lonely, reach out to someone. And T means when you're tired, get some rest. And right now, I think in a moment, at this moment, we're all in a HALT mood. We all have had to HALT our lives. And so what a time now to really do self-care. And when we're hungry, let's stop and let's make a nutritious meal. I know you do Shaklee and stuff. Let's have that nice, nutritious drink and protein and health. And when we're angry, you know, let's process it. You know, take a towel and scream in the towel and do an anger dance, because it will help you to get this frustration and anxiety out of your body. And when you're lonely, join a connection group, you know, come on to my connection group and let's connect. And man, when we're tired, let's get our needed rest so that when this virus is over, wow, we can just flourish together in health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that, Jill. I believe that, I mean, this is a tough time, but I believe that, I was just talking with one of my coworkers this morning. We were talking about that. Let's put together like a group like this to just help to support each other, because now we're in for another 30 days. And yeah, we don't have to go down with the ship, if you will. There are things that, yeah, we have to adjust. We have to figure out how we can get a little bit of exercise when we're at home. We have to figure out how to work around our kids, right? If we have to homeschool them, or, you know, we got to figure out how to eat nutritiously. And it's just, it's a different way of thinking. But I believe that in the end, we can all be, like you said, emerge victorious and connected, and appreciate those connections so much more when this is over and that we can be together. And one gal that I was talking with right before we got on here today was, I said, you know, I believe we're going to realize that we are all, like, the impact that I can have, you know, what I do does impact other people. And I think we live in this world that everyone's like, well, I don't care. I can do whatever I want to do, right? It doesn't matter. Well, you know what? It does matter. Mm-hmm. It matters in a negative way, and it matters in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And we can have that connection. And I'm, again, all for, like, either connecting in the park or going to Aruba or going to a ranch or connecting so that we can feel, we could just feel that connection and that love.
I live in Branson, Missouri, and this is in the United States, Branson is the hotspot for all the shows and the entertainment. And Table Rock Lake is one of the most beautiful lakes. It's pristine and gorgeous. And I live in a subdivision. You would love it here. I live in a subdivision. We're on Ledgestone Golf Course, a professional golf course, 3 outdoor pools, tennis, volleyball, catch and release lakes. I've got everything here in my backyard. And so I'd love to be connecting with a bunch of you guys. And so when this is all over, like, let's have everyone come to Branson. Mm-hmm. And we'll all, like, I teach water aerobics. I do kickboxing in the water. You know, it's only an 8-hour drive from Chicago. In our subdivision, we have lodges, condos, and villas. The largest lodge is 12 bedrooms, 12 baths. Like, let's get a group.
Right? Absolutely.
Baths together.
Yeah.
You know?
It sounds
great. And I organize the whole thing.
Right.
Well, you know, if you live in Chicago, get in the car and let's do, and it can be girl trips. It could be husband and wife. It could be whatever. It doesn't have to be just women.
Right.
You know, if guys want to come and they want to go golfing with my husband, they can golf and us girls can hang out at the pool and whatever. But to me, it's like, let's, when this is over, let's get back into enjoying life again. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be heavy. We can keep it as inexpensive as we can so everyone can come. But my whole thing is I want connection, and I don't want to feel lonely at 66.
Mm-mm. No. No. And I, you know, I love the fact that I work from home and that I have my own business and I have my own schedule, but I also very intentionally work on getting out of the house. You know, and I'll go to the library and work, or I'll go to the coffee shop, or I'll meet people at the health club. You know, we'll work out and then we'll go have coffee and talk about life or health or whatever. And the fact that we can't do that, yeah, it's impacting all of us, but it is helping us, I think, hopefully appreciate those connections that we can have when we can have them again. I'd like to also mention, as we just kind of watch the clock here, I always like to chat a little bit about relationships, like with your mother. And I mean, I usually say, how did your disorders impact your relationship with your mother? But it kind of seems like it was kind of going both ways, right? That she had her disorder and that was in, you know, in, and that was impacting you. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I'll talk on three levels. So with my mom, you know, my mom had borderline personality narcissistic disorder. And so she, no matter which direction you went, it was very difficult to be in a relationship. So what I learned from the 12 steps is how important it is to clean up your side of the street. And when I was a little girl, I was the lost child. I never spoke. Believe it or not, people that know me go, it couldn't have been you, Jill. But I was nonverbal until I was date raped, to be really honest with you. And then at around 14, 15, because of my rage, I would literally swear and throw things at my mom and hit her and just physically abuse her back. And so when I had to do my own amends, I ended up going to my mom in telling her how sorry I was, and I named everything I did. And she was so dysfunctional. At the end of it, she says, I'm so glad you realized I was a good mom. And I went, oh, Mom, this isn't about you. I didn't say, no, you were a horrible mom, because I didn't feel like it was appropriate. I just said, this isn't about you, Mom. It's what I did to you that I feel bad. I mean, I hitchhiked around the United States for a year, and one time left my purse in someone's car. They sent it back to her. She thought I was dead on the side of the road. And so me being a mom, knowing if my son did that to me, I would have been flipping out. So, and then, you know, I threw it in her face when I was a naked dancer and told her that. And she was, you know, so things that I did, I made my amends to my mom. And believe it or not, I held her hand on her deathbed and felt such joy because I knew she was set free from her pain. And not being mean, I haven't missed her a day. She's been gone since 2017, she died, I think, or 15, she died. I haven't missed her, not because I hate her, because she's set free, and I'm set free. Right. So it's been a beautiful transition of life. The second one I would bring up is my son. As a single, never married mom, I made so many mistakes. The number one biggest mistake probably that I made is I'm very transparent and share quite a bit. I'm not embarrassed to share my story at all. And so I shared a lot about myself to my son when he was young and shared about certain things like my drug addiction in front of his friends, thinking I would help teenage boys not do drugs. Well, what it did to our relationship is he said I embarrassed him so much. And he said, Mom, you are the kindest person I've ever met in my entire life. He goes, I don't think if you had the money and could help people financially, you'd stop someone in his store and buy all their groceries. And he goes, if you won the lotto, you wouldn't be buying yachts. You'd be pulling someone over and buying them a new car. And that's who I am. I just love helping people. He said, but you have absolutely no boundaries. He said, I could put a flag in front of you and you wouldn't see it. And so our relationship was very damaged because I didn't know boundaries, and I didn't know boundaries because no one had boundaries. No one heard or saw my boundaries when I was a kid growing up. So, and then I ended up in sales, and they tell you in sales, they teach you how to turn someone's no to a yes. So again, no boundaries. So no matter how many classes I ever was in, no matter how many books I ever read, I never could figure out boundaries until I unburdened a no voice inside of me. The no voice was, you don't hear my no, and therefore I can't hear your no. So until I unburdened the pain within me of no one hearing my no voice, I could not hear their no voice. As soon as I was able to unburden that part with a modality of therapy called internal family systems, then I was set free and my boundaries started to be recognized in others. So my son actually had a boundary that hurt me so bad, Moira. My husband and I wanted to relocate from Chicago. I wanted to move to St. Louis. He said, "Mom, that's just too close to me. Please don't move to St. Louis." So I moved to Branson. We're 4 hours away, and he feels like that's the perfect distance that we could see each other. So that's a relationship that I've had to work hard on. He's 37, and he's my only child, and I love my grandkids. So I've had to really work diligently hard on that one. And lastly is my husband. He gets the last of what I have every day. And no matter how much I try to intentionally give him what I feel like he deserves, I still get caught up in my own self-centered busyness with me wanting to help him. But he gets the last of me. Mm-hmm. And he's gracious, but sometimes he's wounded as a result of it. So he's 76, and he's my best friend, and I love him dearly. He comes in the kitchen, and he makes me dinner and takes good care of me. But, you know, he gets the raw end of it. Mm-hmm. So those are my relationships. And I guess I would say, too, in all the times I went to treatment, he encouraged me. He never said, you know, one time he said, "You're going again? Like, you're not better yet?" And I said, "No, honey, I need to go." And every time there was family week, he always came to family week to support me. And every time I've ever said to him, "Honey, we need to do more marriage counseling," he'll go, "We do?" And I'll go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Okay." Mm-hmm. And he just goes with me. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's the three big relationships mm-hmm. that I would say that I've yeah. worked with.
Yeah. Wow. A lot of nuggets of wisdom in there, things that I want to talk to you about further when we get off this podcast. But again, as we wrap up today, I ask about books because I love to read books and love to learn. Any books that have really helped you along the way?
You know, it's so funny you say that. I have severe ADD, and I just cannot read. I must have 300 books on a bookshelf. And I bet you I've only read maybe one or two because I start to read and I can't remember. So of all the stuff that I have, and I do, I have nuggets, like I'll read here and then I'll read here. You know, the nugget books that I would say that I've been able to read some is, of course, I'm an avid Brené Brown. So I love her, you know, Daring Greatly. And and I love, of course, I'm a Christian. So I love my Bible because it keeps me focused on God. But I love internal family systems therapy. So Dick Schwartz's books on internal family systems, I love, love, love. I recommend that to everyone. And of course, Melody Beattie's books on codependency, Codependent No More, you know, her affirmations books are probably my go-to over the years. So, and then of course, you know, you always got to go with the big book of AA and Eating Disorders Anonymous big book for healing your recovery. So, again, I'm more recovery books than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Where can people find you on social media or website or things like that for people to reach out afterwards if they want to learn more about your retreats or, again, have a resource for recovery?
Yep. Probably, I'm going to, actually, people might think that's great, but my email, I don't mind having my email given out. It's braveheartworkshops with an S on the end @gmail.com. My website is braveheartworkshops.com, and my Facebook pages are Braveheart Workshops. But I have about 7 or 8 different Facebook pages and groups. So if you email me, I can send you the links, and I'd really love for everyone to email me that wants to know about this connection group, because I would love to connect with people so that we can do these amazing connection getaways together in retreats. And I always also, I forgot to tell you, I always am looking for really great leaders who want to do their own retreats. However, I have one requirement. The only requirement I have is if you're going to do a retreat, I need you to have your own following, because it's really hard to book retreats when you don't have a following. So if you have a following and people want to come to your event because they love you, come to me, because I book the entire event for you. All you have to do is get on a plane and show up. I do all the registration. I find the venue. And all you have to do is invite your followers to come. And I do everything else for you. I make it simple. So mm-hmm. if leaders want to do events after the virus is over, I'll send you a needs assessment and I can assess your needs to find out what you're looking for. And you get paid in everything to do your own event.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, thank you, Jill. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and speak with you and learn from you. And I really appreciate you coming on today to share.
Thank you.
And because I know that a lot of people that are listening today will find a lot of value from your story, and just your story of tenacity and hope that we really should never give up on ourselves, never give up on those relationships, but really find a place for, find that time for healing. Because as we heal ourselves, then our life can really open up and become quite joyful. So
thank you for having me. And in closing too, you have my email, and my heart really is out there for family members whose loved ones are struggling with eating disorders and addictions and suicide ideation and cutting and things of that. I'm here. I just want you to know you can email me. I have, Maura will tell you, I have so many resources. I know all the treatment centers around the country. I know so many great therapists around the country. So email me if you're struggling. I don't want you to leave the broadcast knowing that you don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. We don't want to feel, don't want anybody to feel like they're alone in this journey, be it a parent, a child, a person, you know, anybody. So thanks for that. And again, thanks for coming back and listening, everyone. I do appreciate it. Again, continue to share this hopeful podcast out with others, rate and review it. That's how others get to see this wonderful or hear this wonderful podcast too, so that we can help to continue to support each other in this journey and live our best life. So we'll talk with you again soon. Thanks for listening. Do you feel like your juggling of your chaos is just too much and you want to reclaim your life and health? I'm here to help. I offer free 30-minute consultations where I can show you simple steps to help you get back on track. If you're interested, please connect with me. You can do that simply by reaching out on Instagram and send me a DM at @greengorski or email me at moira@gorskiwellness.com. Moira spelled M-O-Y-R-A. I look forward to hearing from you, and take care.